Just two out?
Just two out, yeah. Thank you so much. Thank you. Once again, Thursday evening, trying to bring in Shabbos, a little head start. After our guest speaker tonight, we have a Tom of Shabbos, a little Shomt and Kugel in the back. Rabbi Teller, Chanoch Teller, doesn't really need an introduction. Most of us have heard of him and know about him and read his books. Rabbi Teller is known as the modern Maggid, author of 28 books and counting, most recently a book just put out called Heroic Children. Are we selling that here? We should be. We're selling that here? You can buy that's the newest book here as well. Rabbi Teller is, besides for an amazing speaker around the world, is also a filmmaker, tour guide, and undoubtedly most of us have heard him in yeshivos and seminaries throughout Eretz Yisrael. Personally, Rabbi Teller is someone who's a dear friend, someone who's taking a liking to myself, to my family. Many times I was over at his house, tremendous achnasas orchim, and the chesed that I witnessed at his home made an indelible impact in my life, in the life of my family. It's a tremendous, tremendous chus to have Rabbi Teller here with us. It's a blessing to Camp Hask, the Chavod Rav Rabbi Teller.
Thank you very much, Bishus, Rabbi Rebbe, Rabbi Michelle, I don't see anymore, Bishus Merdastra, Rabbi Willig, Rabbi Pollack, I don't see either, but, okay, in absentia, cherished colleagues. Rabbi Willig asked me to give you Divrei Chizuk, and as Rabbi Pollack mentioned, it's been a difficult, long week, but I heard what Rabbi Michelle said, and far be it from me. I think he said more or less what has to be said. But if Rabbi Willig says to say it, then I'll say it. There's three Yidels in my life. Chronologically, Yidel Michelle, Yidel Willig, and my son-in-law, Yidel Wablowski, my third Yidel. And I play the fourth Yidel. So as far as Chizuk is concerned, I want you to know that we're coming from the same background. Educationally, socioeconomically, but even more than that, my Hask connection, besides the fact religiously I come here every summer, I'm 27 years old, but for the last 30 plus years, I've been taking care of this autistic boy. Now the fact of the matter is, I started off, he was a boy. Then he came a strapping lad, and now he's a full-fledged adult. And it's a struggle. It's always a struggle. He smears me every week. I mean, I take care of him, not like you, one hour a week, but it's a long time. It's probably added up to a full summer already. He smears me over time. I don't think I'm exaggerating. When I wipe him, it's at least 17 rolls of toilet paper. I'm somewhat aware of Quran and privy to the challenges involved. But as Yehuda said, and I learned, not only did I learn by Rinosansi longer than anyone else, I also learned Bechavrusa. And this was his motto. When Achrayim is fasting, you grow from responsibility. And you want to grow. You're going to become bigger people. And this is how you grow. He also mentioned, and it's worth repeating, how the doctor said it, and it's Tovish Moshe, it's true. Shul Salam Turin took it as Kodesh. Whatever the doctor would say, it was sacred. And the whole realm, we all know, I'm going off script just to try and give a little chizuk. Rav Dessler made this fabulous innovation of chesed. In his most famous work, Chumash HaChesed, he writes, you can give in order to give, or you can give in order to take. And how do you know? Yeah, 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 yeah. How do you know? If you're giving in order to give, or giving in order to take, so the acid test will be, give an example. Then you can clear a chakira. You can ask a chakira means a sheepish word. Analyze it. Like, what is a zebra? Is it a black horse with white stripes? Or a white horse with black stripes? We can hear all that all trying to figure out. So he said like this. Chesed, the word chesed, results in love. Ahava means to give. The hav is to give. And the more you give, the more you love. And the chakira is, do you give because you love, or do you love because you give? Think about it for a minute. Why do parents provide for their children? Because they love them? Or because they give to them, therefore they love them? And Rav Dessler proved hermetically that love is consequential to giving. And ironically, if there's someone you don't get along with, the wisest thing you can do would be to give to them. That would alter the relationship. I always thought that we missed the boat come Shavuot's time, part of the Purim time. Who do you give yourself a promise to? Those that you're closest to, your friends, your neighbors, your relatives. That relationship exists already. Give it to someone you don't get along with, and you can really be marva, like the mitzvah is. Marva reyus, love and affection and affinity. Again. Are you giving in order to give or giving in order to take? The nafkamin, the acid test will be, let's say you go to visit someone in the hospital. See if you're giving in order to give. How do you know if you're giving in order to give? You're giving in order to take. So the acid test will be if the patient is sleeping. So if you're giving in order to take, and you find the patient is sleeping, what's your action? Chutzpah. They're sleeping when I want to fulfill the mitzvah of Chayim, to push them up, snap them back together, to fulfill the mitzvah of Chayim. The less sensitive you go to the nurse, they get very sick. If the less sensitive you say, you're feeling super, you're down. That's if you're giving in order to give. But if you're giving in order to take, and you find the patient is sleeping, what's your reaction? Josh? Ask me a Josh here. You must be Josh here. Rifki? If you're giving in order to give and the patient is sleeping, what do? You come again. You wait. You leave them a note. Because how often do you get to sleep in a hospital? In a hospital, they wake you up to see if you're sleeping. In a hospital, maybe that's what happened to me. In a hospital, they give you sleeping, they wake you up to get your sleeping pill. So if you give in order to give, and I can give you 1,000 examples of this. Not sure. I can give you 10 examples of this. But if you're over here, you got the proof. This is the source of love and of giving. So I wanted to add to Tesla, and I'm so convinced that it's true that if I could present it to him, he's in Shammai 57 years with a challenge. But I believe you'll agree with me. The mandate of a parent, and this was expressed in the film of Rabbi Michelle said, the mandate of a parent is to love every child the same. But inevitably, and invariably, if you have a special child, you're going to love that one the most because you give this one the most. And the more you give, the more you love. So you have the opportunity to work on your love like never before by giving and giving. I want to take something else. I try to come to Hask religiously every summer. And last summer, I landed in the morning, and due to traffic like you've never ever seen, I arrived in time for my 10 o'clock tour. I drove the whole Cotton Picking Day. And I was rather tired from the flight, and so they asked if I wanted supper, and I said, I wouldn't mind eating breakfast and lunch also. So there was some staff meeting. It was after, I don't remember, Color War, some kind of event. And there was a staff meeting in the Pagoda, that was called. I don't know, some room over there. And people were talking about camp experiences. The most moronic, imbecilic, and idiotic thing I've ever done in my life was walk out after it's over. I heard three things in that meeting, which I'll never forget. I've said this many times. I'm going to share them with you. The first kid who spoke said, "My parents say that I'm not in the real world. Yeshiva is not the real world. Camp is not the real world. But I'm telling you," he said, "camp has. That's the real world. Because it's all about giving. That's the real world." The second camper said, second camper, probably counselor, said about a different counselor. Or maybe he was a division head, I don't know, he was maybe more choshev. But he said about a certain counselor that his camper has a horrific disease, lo aleinu, that may be called necronarco, I don't know, but it's got some Latin, very impressive word, whereby this camper is sleeping all the time. They have to wake him up to feed him. And he said that his counselor, this boy's counselor, is wheeling him to each and every activity, and he's always the first one there. They said to him, what's your rush? The kid's sleeping. He said, if he wakes up, I don't want to miss him. I'm pulling him away. If I were in my sleep, I'd make 50 rushes for Ella just on this one story. And lastly, there was a boy, a camper, who has, I don't know the medical term, but it would probably be volunteer mutism, if there's something like that. He's able to talk, but he doesn't. It just says I'm able, this camper. And before Shabbos, he has three shirts. Button-down shirts like this, and he has polo shirts and t-shirts. And the counselor's dressed for Shabbos, and they put on a green polo shirt. And this kid who doesn't talk said to the Shabbos, "You're going to put a green shirt on me before Shabbat?" The counselor said, "Almost fell out the window." And that's also annoying us. Okay, so you're in a really good place for love, for growth, for improving yourselves. You all know that. But if there's a pivot to be taken, be mechazik yourselves. It's the summer of a lifetime. Okay, what's left? I went off script already. Okay, I didn't know if you had nothing to do, but... Nosson Tzvi Finkel, the Mirosh Yeshiva, the largest yeshiva in the history of history, is American Yankee Doodle. He grew up in Chicago in the 50s. Now, just to give you an idea of what the 50s are and what were in America, the greatest craze in America were the hula hoops then. Joe DiMaggio had not retired. McCarthy was conducting investigations. The craze on television was the Mickey Mouse Club. And the biggest sensation in America is a person, a term I can't say in the Beis Medrash, but if you know anatomy, it sounds like pelvis. Now, I'm not telling you that Torah in America was more Torahic in the 60s or 70s, but it gives you a framework. And he was speaking about the background often, not out of nostalgia, but he wanted people to understand that to become an ungodly, you're not to be raised in Brooklyn, or Lakewood, or Tinker, or Gateshead, or Nebraska, because he certainly wasn't. And you don't be raised in the Chol of Yisrael or go to Camp Aguda, because he certainly wasn't. He went to a college school, he went to a college camp, he was on the student council, he was a starter on the basketball team. Every year, NCSY Kollel would come to his house, and they crowd in his apartment. And he's saying to them, "How many of you are from the Midwest?" And 18 hands shot up. He said, "How many of you went to the academy?" Where he went. And 14 hands went up. "And how many of you were on the varsity basketball team?" And 6 hands went up. "And how many of you were starters?" And 3 hands went up. He said, "I was too." And then everybody, every chin went down, clunk, 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 clunk. "And this is where I am today. There's no limit. Just set your vision upon a star and work at it, and you'll get there." For reasons I don't know, I literally wrote his biography. He came to America often to raise money, to see a man who was so sick, advanced Parkinson's. And they asked him, his entourage, why are you bringing a man so sick to America? He said, we're not schlepping him. He's schlepping us. He felt responsibility on his shoulders. For reasons I don't know, he only went to Chicago once to collect money. Chicago is a very benevolent, magnanimous, philanthropic city. He only went there once. And not only did he go to the academy, one year he also went to the Skokie Yeshiva, as they call it, Yeshiva. And the boys were so proud. Chicago's proud son had come back to Skokie. And he gave him to Beis Medrash, and the Nusser Tzvi was too weak, and his condition to go down the steps. So he drove around to the front of Beis Medrash, which was a glass door, and he came in. And he all came as close as they could. He said to them, I too am from Chicago. And I too love baseball. And I became a Rosh Hashanah. And as Billy said, he set their imaginations on fire. Other speakers, with all histrionics and gesticulations, could not set their fires on imagination. Their imaginations on fire, like he had. Just two stories about him. Then one, two stories. There's a boy, he had a very liberal admission policy to the mirror. So liberal, I was even admitted. And he said, you know, you're letting everybody in. He said, they would have been strict when I came, they wouldn't have let me in. So a boy came, presented his credentials to Rosh Yeshiva, he was admitted to Yeshiva, and the Rosh Yeshiva asked him, well, which chair do you want to go to? He said, didn't think about it. So Nassim said, usually boys go where their friends are. Where are your friends? He said, I don't have any friends, Mrs. Yeshiva. You don't have any friends? Then I'm your friend. He puts the list of his arm around his shoulder, put on his frock coat, and walked him across the street to the Yeshiva. And as they approached the building, there was Yisrael Bluestein, the Rashid's brother, and I said, Yisrael, this is my friend. I'm going to learn with him, and you're lucky to learn with him also. In about 1 minute, he had the two best of the Bluesters in Yeshiva, and the fellow became an unguard. I had a friend from high school who then came to the mirror about the same time that I came to the mirror. He lived there a number of years, got married, a bunch of kids, then went back to America to become gainfully employed, and was stricken with a debilitating, terrible disease which took his life. Now, Renaissance felt terrible for the widow, and she wrote her, I'm going to help you raise these children. And every week, he'd write a letter to the boys, it's four boys in one room, and learn it. Wrong hand. And the girl naturally felt left out of this relationship. He wasn't writing her letters and learning. And one time, the mother mentioned to Rosh Yeshiva that my daughter feels that she's left out. Next week, she got a letter. And this time, it was a large part. Covered in red, signed Nusser Tzvi. I thought to myself, what was he thinking as he was coloring his heart? As the bank is pouring for repayment, the debtors are banging down the door, the boys are coming in for hunger and learning, and he's coloring the heart with all his heart, for that's the way he did everything. And that's an inspiration for us. So blessedly, I'm not going to speak more to you, I'm almost finished. This is what I mentioned. I came out with a new book, Just, 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 and I have a remarkable story to share. As Rabbi Lubin mentioned, I'm a tour guide in Yad Vashem. I find it somewhat amazing. Tour guides on school data and statistics that are numbing. We're talking about an infinite crime. What's the most famous story of the Holocaust? It's not a hard question. The answer is Anne Frank. And Anne's story is not a reflective story. She wasn't in the ghettos, wasn't in the camp, she had a roof over her head, she had a modicum of food with her family, but because it's a story, people are better able to relate. In March of 1938, it was the Anschluss, and overnight, a quarter of a million Austrian Jews are now under Nazi dominion. And this is a year and a half before the war began. And their pictures are broadcast to the West, having cleaned in the streets, beaten, children are thrown into the river, icy river. In America, they're concerned about the plight and the suffering and the arrest of one Western Jew. His name was Dr. Sigmund Freud. And the way the mind works, it's pretty unfortunate to say about Freud, the way the mind works, it's easier to think about one over 250,000. It's easier to think about 85 over 6 million. It's easier to think about 6 million paper clips, or palm clips, over 6 million flushes. So one of the things I always try and stress to the individual. So I'm working on this book no less than 14 years. And we made a deadline that was a pretty assiduous deadline, a draconian deadline. We had to finish. And I had neglected to work on the cover. For all those who think that they don't judge a book by its cover, I challenge you to sell a book. Cover is a very important part of a book. So I put my team, that means my children, are looking for a picture. We're going through all the archives, and we came up with this picture, and the copyright holder is the United States Holocaust Memorial Museum, USHMM in Washington. And I requested the picture, and they wrote back, "No problem, you can have it, it'll take 3 weeks." 3 weeks. You know, life is a roller coaster. Got the picture, ready to go to press. 3 weeks. I didn't have 3 days. And then, because I'm an Israeli, I thought to myself, the way to go about this is to test it. It doesn't take 3 weeks to turn a low-res picture into a high-res. It takes about 10 seconds. I have someone I know who lives in Baltimore, very powerful person, influential, affluent. They say that he has on his cell phone the phone number of every congressman and senator. I figured he must have a connection. And his son learns in yeshiva next to my house. So I go and say, "Arye, is your father connected to the United States Holocaust Memorial Museum?" He said, "No." But then he added, "But my mother is on the board." I was going to ring his neck. So his mother, Judge Chaya Friedman, I sent her an email and said, "Chaya, I need your help. I got to get permission for this picture. So I'll see what I can do." One day later, one day later, I have the picture. And when you request a picture, you have to sign a form. I'm not going to make any alterations. The picture of 8 children, can't make it 4 children. And I said, "I'm going to make this change, this change, that change, this change, that change, this change." They sent me the picture. But then, because I always want to highlight the individual, the picture is sitting there, and I wanted to highlight so one point is colored. And here again, I didn't request that, but I had to ask special permission. So I sent an email to Judge Friedman. I said, "Hi, I need you to." He said, "I'm in the middle of a bird trial, and I'm really busy now." I said, "This is killing me." And she said, "I'll see what I can do." She sent an email. A day later, she wrote me back, "Yay, yay, nay, nay. You'll have to wait for their decision." We had press queue that night. We had already burned the plates. They were located, they were already affixed to the drum. We had a press queue that night. We'd have 10 minutes, you know, after it goes to the press, we'd have 10,000 covers. 3 hours, 2 hours and 48 minutes before the press, I get an email from the head archivist, the United States Holocaust Memorial Museum, and she writes to me, "Dear Rabbi Teller, you may have to use the picture." We went to our legal department, they said, "Absolutely, unequivocally, you may not use it." The fellow, the boy you highlight, spoke out, he's sensitive. "If you want to use the picture the way it originally is, you may. Any alteration, you have no permission." And here we have that roller coaster. It wasn't looking good. It's now 2 hours and 11 minutes to press. And I wrote her back. I don't roll over so quickly. I'm a bit of a fighter. I wrote her back. I said, "Give me his phone number. I'd like to call her." And she said, she wrote back, "We don't know where he lives. We don't know where he is." And so I wrote her again. I said, "But it's now an hour and 40 minutes. I said, but you just said he spoke out. He's sensitive." And she sent me an online clipping, an hour and 12 minutes to go. An online clipping. This picture was taken at the liberation of Auschwitz. She sent me an online clipping from this year, the anniversary of the liberation of Auschwitz. 4 people from this picture went back to Auschwitz. They're now in the grip of old age. And point to themselves as children in the picture. It was apparent from this living, let's say apparent from Yeshivish, Mashta, it seemed, that this fellow's last name was Hirsch. And it sent the clipping that he's from Europe. I had an hour and 3 minutes to find this guy whose last name may be Hirsch in Europe. So I figured like this. England, that's not Europe. Russia, that's not Europe. Israel, that's not Europe. Not bad. 16 countries to go. Forget Monaco, Liechtenstein, 14 countries. And then, looking at the picture, the kid is in good shape. He can't be a Pole. And I figured to be in such good shape, he has to be Hungarian. Hungary's invaded in March 1944, has to be Hungarian. I figured Hungarian will never go to France. I need to go to Holland. Basically, Sherlock Teller had figured out he must be in either Switzerland or Belgium. So I have a really good friend in Switzerland, Moshe Luzer. So Moshe Luzer, he's very smart, he works for IBM. So this is a perfect. I said, Moshe Luzer, I need a guy, Auschwitz survivor, whose last name may be Hirsch. And all I heard was him doubled over in laughter. And then he asked me, what did I just drink? No, Moshe, no joke, I need to find this guy. He said, there's no way you can do it. If he's from, I would know him. There's no such thing. I don't know if he's from. I said, you know what? He's probably from Hungary. So his first name is probably Gavor or Tibor. That's Hungarian for Steve or Mike. So I hear him clicking on the computer. He said, Gavor Hirsch, 86 years old, engineer, here's his phone number. Well, it was 14 minutes to go. I pulled him up. No problem. He said, I can take the picture. I sent an email to this head archivist. And I said, I have permission. If you have any questions, here's his phone number. I took that as an omen. Okay, so Mother Rav Osai, Bim Chuzik, you're doing important things. We're working on love. If you're interested in the book, I think you'll find it enriching. I know I will. Thank you.
Thank you very much.